Welcome to another Books and Culture podcast with Books and Culture's editor, John Wilson, and I'm Stan Guthrie. This week, John will be looking at a new collection of poetry that is not quite as new as it seems.
Ha! That's a good description, Stan. Well, it's called The Best of the Best American Poetry, a special 25th anniversary edition. And every year now, for a quarter century, this anthology, The Best American Poetry, has been coming out annually. And this particular volume goes back over those 25 years and picks 100 poems, at least one from each one of the volumes that has appeared over that quarter century. The series editor is David Lehman, and each year he selects a writer to be the guest editor for that year. And this year, the person who went back through those years and picked 100 poems is Robert Pinsky, who is a very distinguished poet. He was Poet Laureate of the United States. He's also, you might say, a kind of ambassador for poetry. For many years, he wrote a wonderful column in the Washington Post book world. He's also an excellent critic. His book, The Situation of Poetry, is certainly one of the best books of poetry criticism published in the last 50 years. And if you look through the contents of this book, the poems come in alphabetical order by the author's name, not chronologically. If you look down the list, it's a kind of who's who of American poetry, the people who were best known in that period. There are some people who are not as well known, but largely it's the figures who have been most eminent, most widely published, and so on during that period. So there aren't a lot of surprises. There are a lot of good poems here. Anyone who is in my company, that is, each year when this anthology comes out, I look forward to reading it. I have probably, I would say probably 10 or so of the previous volumes at home. You want to get this book. Now, having said that, I want to concentrate in our conversation primarily on one thing that I thought about when I was reading the book, and that is how the people think or don't think about religion, about God, because that's central to my understanding of the world. And there are lots of poets I read and like whose take on things is very different from my own. Mm-hmm. Nonetheless, that's always something that I'm interested in. And in this case, it's particularly interesting because one of the things that you can see in poetry over the last quarter century, and the same thing is not true just in poetry, it's true in, you might say, culture generally, is that there's a lot of religion floating around, some of it explicit and some of it implicit. That is, some of it in the form of people who are writing from a position that is directly anchored in a faith tradition. But often people who are writing not from a specific faith tradition, but who are appropriating some of the language, some of the concerns, some of the images that come from that, especially Christianity, because this is the best American poetry. So you might think that that would be reflected in this anthology, but it isn't. Now, again, that doesn't mean that there aren't a lot of good poems here. It tells you something about the taste of the people over the years who compiled the previous volumes. Mm-hmm. It tells you something about Robert Pinsky. He wrote a very interesting essay a few years ago in which he doesn't talk a lot about religion one way or another, but he talked a little about it and how it's something that has just never really meant anything to him. You know, he's a very, very secular person. And so that has something to do with it. It also has something to do not just with him individually or anyone else individually, but with certain attitudes that are very pervasive in not all of our so-called elite culture, but sectors of it. So, for instance, in this book, you have a poem by Billy Collins called Dharma, which starts out, "The way the dog trots out the front door every morning without a hat or an umbrella, without any money or the keys to her doghouse, never fails to fill the saucer of my heart with milky admiration. Who provides a finer example of life without encumbrance? Thoreau in his curtainless hut, with a single plate, a single spoon? Gandhi with his staff and his holy diapers? Off she goes into the material world with nothing but her brown coat and her modest blue collar, following only her wet nose, the twin portals of her steady breathing, followed only by the plume of her tail. If only she did not shove the cat aside every morning and eat all his food, what a model of self-containment she would be, what a paragon of earthly detachment. If only she were not so eager for a rub behind the ears, so acrobatic in her welcomes. If only I were not her god. That's Dharma. And then we turn to a poem at the end by Robert Wrigley, which is called Religion. Okay? The last thing the old dog brought home from her pilgrimages through the woods was a man's dress shoe, a black, still shiny wingtip. I feared at first a foot might be in it, but no, it was just an ordinary shoe, and while it was clear it had been worn, and because the mouth of the dog, a retriever, skilled at returning ducks and geese, was soft, the shoe remained a good shoe. And I might have given it to a one-legged friend, but all of them dressed their prostheses too. So there it was, a rescued or a stolen odd shoe, though in the last months of the dog's life, I noticed how the shoe became her friend, almost something she slept on or near and nosed whenever she passed, as though checking it to see if, in her absence, that mysterious, familiar, missing foot might not come again.
Mm-hmm.
So that's about what you get, those two poems, both of which involve dogs, as it happens, Dharma and Religion. And, you know, there are a few other poems in the book, but that ironic stance, of course, people like us, it's not, we would never believe anything primitive
right.
like that, but we can sort of play with these ideas, and that seems to me too bad. It's too bad, partly because it would have been, I think, a better anthology if, along with many other voices who were in here, there had been a few more poems, not a few more, a few, that did not take that stance, that represented a different way of seeing in poems that were good and were worth reading. But having said that, I want to finish by mentioning several poems that don't particularly bear on this theme, though the very last one I'm going to read does. But several poems that I particularly enjoyed, and I won't read them all because we don't have time, but I'll just mention them in case anybody happens to get this book for themselves and they happen to think that maybe they would like these poems too.
Sure.
There are a couple, not too many, thank goodness. There are some dreary poems in here that have some sort of political... There's one very, again, loaded with layers of irony and self-awareness by Robert Haas called Bush's War, which I will not read anything from. But there's a very funny poem by James Tate, who I like a lot, just a crazy poet, and it's called Bound in Duty. I got a call from the White House, from the president himself, asking me if I'd do him a personal favor. I like the president, so I said, sure, Mr. President, anything you like. He said, just act like nothing's going on. Act normal. That would mean the world to me. Can you do that, Leon? Why, sure, Mr. President, you've got it. Normal, that's how I'm going to act. I won't let on, even if I'm tortured, I said, immediately regretting that tortured bit. He thanked me several times and hung up. I was dying to tell someone that the president himself called me, but I knew I couldn't. The sudden pressure to act normal was killing me. And what was going on anyway? So I won't read off it, but it's very funny. And then another one that I liked a lot was Allen Ginsberg's Salutations to Fernando Pessoa. And I'm not going to read the whole thing. I'm just going to read the start of it. Every time I read Pessoa, I think I'm better than he is. I do the same thing more extravagantly. He's only from Portugal. I'm American, greatest country in the world right now, end of 20th century. Though Portugal had a big empire in the 15th century. Never mind, now shrunk to a corner of Iberian Peninsula. Whereas New York, take New York, for instance, though Mexico City's bigger, New York's richer. Think of Empire State Building. Not long ago, world empire's biggest skyscraper. Be that as it may, I've experienced 61 years of 20th century, and so on and so on. It's a wonderful late Ginsberg poem. And then the last one I want to read is probably my favorite in the whole collection by a poet I really love. And this poem does counter a little bit what I was talking about earlier. And it's called Asphodel by A.E. Stallings. Our guide turned in her saddle, broke the spell. You ride now through a field of asphodel, the flower that grows on the plains of hell. Across just such a field the pale shade came of proud Achilles, who had preferred a name and short life to a long life without fame. And summoned by Odysseus, he gave this wisdom, better by far to be a slave among the living than great among the grave. I used to wonder, how did such a bloom become associated with the tomb? Then one evening, walking through the gloom, I noticed a strangish fragrance. It was sweet, like honey, but with hints of rotting meat. An army of them bristled at my feet.
Hmm.
So, the best of the best American poetry from the last 25 years. Get a copy, and if you do, read it. Let me know what you think.